This is Brewers on Tap.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 61 of Brewers on Tap. I'm Lane Grindle. It is good to have you with us for this week's edition of the podcast. A lot coming your way. We're going to sit down and talk to former Brewer and Fox Sports Wisconsin analyst Jerry Augustine. He's part of the pre- and post-game shows for Fox Sports Wisconsin. We're going to get his thoughts on some of the pitching from the crew so far in 2016. And we're going to talk to Brewers prospect Nash Walters. Plus, what are the playoff chances of the AA Biloxi Shuckers and the Class A Wisconsin Timber Rattlers? We'll set that all up for you as well here on the podcast. Let's look at what this past week has brought for the crew. We last talked to you on Wednesday of last week, and on Wednesday the crew finished up a three-game sweep of the Colorado Rockies. And things were looking up on this homestand. That was the front part of this homestand. Then a four-game series with the Pirates in the middle of the homestand. That didn't go as well. The Pirates sweeping all four games of that series, but Orlando Arcia did get into the power game a little bit.
Jared Hughes on for Vogelsong. And the pitch. Arcia sends it to left center and deep. Get up! Get up! Get out of here and gone for Orlando Arcia. A three-run home run, his first in the big leagues. The Brewers are on the board, and no doubt about that one. And they're right back in it.
Then the Cardinals came to town and won a back-and-forth affair on Monday night that ended with a Cardinals 6-5 win. And on Tuesday night, the Cardinals coming out with another victory. One move made on Tuesday, the Brewers outrighted third baseman Will Middlebrooks to AAA Colorado Springs after activating him from the 15-day disabled list. And Junior Guerra will be back soon. He'll be getting the start on Friday night in Pittsburgh.
And now, this week in Brewers history.
Couple of cycles for you. September 3rd, 1976, Mike Hegan hits for the cycle at Detroit, becoming the first Brewers player to accomplish this feat. And September 3rd of 2011, George Kateris becomes the seventh Brewer ever to hit for the cycle in an 8-2 win on September 3rd, as we just told you, at Houston. So September 3rd's been a good day. It's coming up in a couple of days. That's been a good date for the Brewers to hit for the cycle.
Let's break it down.
We're joined now by Jerry Augustine, former Brewer, and of course you see him on Fox Sports Wisconsin covering the Brewers all season long as well. Augie, it's always good to see you. How are you?
Great to be with you, Lane. It's always fun anytime you're at the ballpark.
Well, this has been obviously a kind of a fun year from the standpoint of seeing young guys come up, get their opportunities, try to develop. And we've seen some of the younger guys that maybe have been here a little bit also develop and have their trials over the course of the season as well. So, you know, I think we've learned some things about this pitching staff this year. What has stood out to you about 2016 so far on the mound?
I think consistency, continuously working to get better. I think anytime when you talk about Craig Council, what he said, the pitching staff was going to be the strength of this ball club, and all of a sudden halfway through the year you get rid of your setup man and your closer, and they still are able to keep up that good versatility and be strong in the bullpen. Starting staff starting to come around and learn things, and it's really fun to see a guy like Zach Davies, who's not a guy who comes in with the 96, 97 mile an hour fastball, but really finds a good way to understand pitching, goes out and understands what he has to do, has the good knowledge, and is successful.
We always hear the term pitchability with pitchers, and I always think of Zach Davies when I think of that term. Explain that for our listeners, you know, what that means and why you can be so effective even if you aren't throwing 97.
Well, I think the first thing with Zach, he understands himself and the style he is, and, you know, we've seen it with the way he throws the ball. When he pitches the ball, he now knows in his delivery that when he releases the ball, the pitches come out of the same spot. That release point is the same. When you have the same release point, you can throw multi-pitches. It makes makes it difficult, number one, for the hitter to pick up, and number two, you can use more versatile pitches. I think the second thing he's learned that, you know, when you stay down in the zone, when you can dominate the bottom half of the zone and pitch up and in and out when you want to, you can be very successful. But you still have to stay aggressive. It doesn't make any difference whether your fastball is 91 or it's 97. You still have to stay aggressive in the strike zone. He's learned that. He's taken it, and he's really built the way he pitches each and every game like that, and it's really been a fun experience to watch.
You've obviously coached this game a lot in your life, and you were on the mound. You've done it yourself. You know, you talk about missing and your misses being small misses, but also missing down, and I think that's been something that every young pitcher has to learn when they come up.
Yeah, they do. You know, everybody's a little bit different. You know, we see guys that, and we saw Carlos Martinez the other night. This guy is a barn burner. He can throw the ball 97, 98. He can get away with different pitches in different spots. But when most of the guys in the big leagues, I don't care who you are, but if you throw 93 or less than that, you really have to learn how to locate your ball. We look at Willy Peralta. Now, Willy's more of a mechanical type situation, but even with Willy, his release point and when his direction coming to the mound is so important that when he's come up from the minor leagues now, did he make a lot of changes? No. Was it big changes that we see every day on the mound? No, it's just something small, mechanical. Now really helps him release that ball in the same spot, gets him on top of the ball, and really makes him nice, free, and easy so he can locate the ball better. And now you see him doing that. Now he just has to build on that. It can't come up here and just say, I'm done. I've had a couple great outings. I'm going to move on. This is where you start building from, and it's going to be interesting to see how Willie goes on from here the rest of the season.
And Willie's body language has looked better this time around. It seems like this is a guy that's a man on a mission. He took that move when he got sent down to Colorado Springs and really used it as motivation to get himself back here and be a better pitcher. That's the way at least it looks his first couple times through.
Yeah, he's more aggressive in the strike zone. I you know, it comes with confidence. Anything you do in life, no matter whether we're up in the booth talking about a game, you still have to have the confidence that what you're going to say pertains to the game and that people are going to enjoy what we talk about. But the same thing goes on the mound. When you go out there, that concentration of being able to locate, and when you locate that pitch in a certain spot, you're going to have success with it. And confidence really is a big thing because it relaxes you, number one, and number two, it allows you to get out and really extend on the ball, and it makes you throw a more purposeful pitch. So when I see guys like Willie and I see some of the guys, the way they've done in the bullpen now, you look at what Tyler Thornburg's done. Just fantastic. But Tyler Thornburg has a lot of confidence. He knows that if he makes the pitches in the spots, he's going to be successful, and he just goes out and does it.
What do you make of the Junior Guerra story? I mean, we haven't seen him in almost a month. We're going to see him, obviously, on Friday night in Pittsburgh. But the way he's been able to not just work himself into the rotation, but really be dominant and be the most consistent starting pitcher probably over the course of this year for the Brewers.
You know, when he came up, everybody heard about the split finger change. And it's a nasty pitch when you can command it. So it's a little hard on the arm at times, and that it can tire out an arm a little bit. But when Junior Guerra came up, really, he was throwing great fastballs. His fastball was 94 to 95, and he was locating it very well. I was really impressed with his fastball before I was impressed with the split finger, to be honest with you, because he was locating hitting it so well. Then all of a sudden you see that good hard breaking ball that he commands for strike. So now we have two pitches that he throws in the strike zone. Now he can throw the pitch up and throw the split finger down and let it go down. That's a very, very tough pitch. Or he can throw his fastball down and come with the split finger after it and still goes down. So his way of going about his job and pitching, the way he uses the split finger to change to go with it, has really been what has made him the great pitcher that he has this year, because he uses it and he incorporates it the same way by where he locates the pitches with his fastball earlier in the counts.
You already mentioned the success the bullpen's had this year, and you know, we've seen Corey Knebel come back up and look better this last time up. Obviously, still a young guy, still learning, and I think we forget that sometimes with some of these guys. But there's some potential there for the back part of that bullpen, even with Jefferson Smith moving on. Obviously, we've seen it from Thornburg as well, but I think that the thing that has stood out to me about the bullpen is the ability to uncover some gems out there. You know, Carlos Torres wasn't even with this team in spring training, and look at the role that he's had on this team. It's really been fun to see that group come together.
Well, you know, when Craig Counsell took over the team last year, I think the one thing he was looking at the bullpen is they know K-Rod was not going to be around. That was something that was going to happen. So what he wanted to do is he wanted to build a team, not just in the bullpen, but on the playing field, and then with starting staff that's very versatile. And I think that's one thing he's done. He went out and got arms, and he said, you know what, everybody's involved. It's just not one guy. Yeah, we do have a closer. We do have a kind of a setup guy. But you still want those guys to know that in the situations, if it's right, he can use anybody. And I think that instilled confidence in our pitchers that, you know what, first of all, he's going to give us an opportunity. He's never going to get down. He's going to use us wisely. We're all going to be in the right routine. When you take all those factors and you add it in there, I think it really builds confidence, not only in just one person, but it builds it in a whole staff. And I think that's a compliment to Craig, the way he went about it from spring training, saying, we're versatile. We're all good. We're all going to get the opportunity. I need everybody to perform. It's just not one guy. I need everybody.
Obviously, we're knocking on the door to September, and there's a chance we may see some guys come up at some point over the course of this month. Remains to be seen how many guys and what kind of roles they'll be asked, but that could be fun to see some of these young guys get some opportunities. I don't know that we're going to see a ton of guys get up here, but maybe one or two get some opportunities.
Yeah, you know, the guy I'm interested in is Josh Hader.
Yeah.
Left-handed, I'm left-handed. Well, what else is new? I say he's more like a Madison Bumgarner. I think the way he throws the ball, is the way the arm gets away from his body a little bit, I see a lot more Madison Bumgarner than a Chris Sale.
Yeah.
I think Chris Sale kind of tucks the ball in a little bit, has great movement on, but I'll take either one of them.
Yeah.
If he can come up. But, you know, this is a kid who's gone down. He's done everything they want him to do. Will they bring him up? That's remaining to be seen. But this guy would be fascinating to see. I think he's got a great future. I think they got some guys at Brinson, the kid they just signed, hitting like 600 in Myers. These are guys they want to see. And our fans in Milwaukee are, I'll tell you what, we drew over 2 million people with a team that's not as below 500 we are. That is outstanding for an area like Milwaukee to draw those fans. What do they love? They love the future. They love what Craig Council brings. They love what the way David has gone out and David Stern has gone out and gotten his players and done what he said, and he's really lived up to it. So you take David Stern, you add Matt Arnold to the program, and then you got the coaches, all educators. I tell you, it builds for something very solid. It's going to be interesting to see it from here on the rest of the year.
Should be fun, Augie. We appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
Oh, anytime.
Our thanks to Jerry Augustine for joining us on the podcast this week. And now we take a look at the Brewers minor leagues.
Checking in on the farm.
Well, as we look down on the farm, big news is Double-A Biloxi and Class A Wisconsin in their quest to try and claim a spot in their respective leagues postseason. Wisconsin is currently tied with Burlington for the wild card spot in the Midwest League, with 6 games remaining for the T-Rats. And they own the tiebreaker over Burlington. The Shuckers are 4.5 games out of their division, but they still have a shot at a wild card if Pensacola can win the second half crown in the South Division of the Southern League. Blue Wahoos won the first half, and winning the second half would open the door for the team with the next best overall record. Pensacola is a half game back of Mississippi for the second half lead, while the Shuckers are a half game in front of the Braves for the next best overall record. It's a little bit confusing. Lucky enough for Biloxi, they play Mississippi at a 5-game series to wrap up the regular season, so they'll have plenty of control of their own destiny. Staying on the topic of Biloxi, Taylor Youngman was named the Southern League Pitcher of the Week. 8 scoreless innings in his lone start last week. He also collected the win on Monday night on the mound for the Shuckers as well. His teammate Brandon Woodruff has continued to roll. Woodruff on Monday night went 7 scoreless. Actually, that was a complete game because they played a doubleheader, so they played 2 7-inning games, and he struck out 10 in that effort. In Helena, the H Brewers are 15-23 in the Pioneer League, and one of their young arms, Nash Walters, has seen the struggles in the hitter-friendly league. However, Walters, exciting young arm to watch in the coming years in the Brewers organization, and I had a chance to chat with him in Helena at the end of July.
Nash, let's start with, you know, your journey to this point. Of course, a third-round draft pick last year. Still a young guy, but here you are in Helena. It's got to be kind of wild being an 18-year-old, now 19-year-old, out there playing professional baseball, I'm sure.
Oh, it is. It's very surreal. It's a great opportunity, though, to get to be able to do what I want for a living, do something that I love. It's just amazing to come out here every day and get to play baseball. So,
what are some of the things that you've experienced in your first 2 years of pro ball, you know, that have been grow up moments, you know, being out on your own for the first time?
A lot of rough outings, a lot of stuff to deal with on the field and off, great learning moments, just stuff to really help me develop through this process.
How hard is that? Because, you know, you're a third round pick. you're used to basically enjoying nothing but success, and you know, and everybody tries to prepare you for it, but it's hard to be prepared for, that you're going to have struggles, and you're going to have growing pains when you get into professional ball. How hard is it to kind of slow yourself down, not get too caught up in that, and just continue to focus on the process and getting yourself better, regardless of how the last outing might have been?
It's pretty difficult. It's one of those where you just got to learn from it that night and then move on. The next day, you just completely forget about it. You learn from it, and by the end of the night, you just say whatever. You move on, get ready for the next 5 days.
How has your confidence grown, you know, as you've made this move up to Helena from Arizona? As you said, some tough outings, but at the same time, I'm sure there's individual moments within there where you say, all right, I made that pitch, I executed this pitch in that spot. How do those help you kind of get ready for the next start?
Well, confidence-wise, when I get to make those good pitches or get a good out, it helps tremendously. Helps me focus on the next guy up. Helps me throughout the week get ready for that next start. So
let's go through your preparation in between starts. You know, what are the things you do to get yourself prepared, both physically and mentally?
Physically, we lift weights twice a week before a start. We do some conditioning. We do some preparation mentally. Throw a bullpen 2 days after our start. And then the next 2 days, we do a little touch and feel, getting ready to get back on the mound 5 days.
Last year after you were drafted, you got a chance to do the whole Miller Park experience. What was that like, meeting Craig Council and being around the club?
Man, it was something I'll never forget. Just a great opportunity to be able to go up there and meet all the guys that we look up to and that eventually we want to be like. So it was great.
Does it serve as motivation for you a little bit?
It does. You see those guys and you just picture yourself up there every day. And it's just great motivation to be able to come out here and try to do the best you can every day.
When was it that you knew baseball was going to maybe be something you could do as a career? Was there a light that went on at some point? You said, hey, I'm pretty good at this. This could be something.
I've always wanted to. I never thought I'd be able to. And about 2 or 3 days before the draft, I got a call saying that I'd be able to, and just changed my whole world.
Nash, you're a Texas kid. So, you know, you're kind of used to the open range, so to speak, and obviously Montana's quite a ways from Texas, but there's probably some similarities in some ways, isn't there?
A little bit. You get to go out and go mudding like I did yesterday, and it's just great country to be in. Go fishing every chance I get, go exploring every off day. There's never a dull moment.
Thank you, Nash. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Nash Walters for joining us here on Brewers on Tap. Coming up in the next couple of days, we'll find out if there's any guys in the Brewers system that are going to get September call-ups, so keep an eye on that.
Here's what's on tap with the Brewers.
All right, here's the big thing that's on the horizon for the Brewers, and this is a cool thing. If you're a fan, I would strongly encourage you to pay attention and maybe try to get involved in this if you can. This was just announced on Tuesday morning. It's the Brewers Give Back Game, and this is going to be Sunday, September 25th, the final home game of the season for the Brewers. It's against the Reds. It's at 1:10 p.m. For the first time in franchise history, the Brewers are going to donate nearly all ticket proceeds from their game to four local charities: the Boys and Girls Club of Greater Milwaukee, the Mac Fund, Midwest Athletes Against Childhood Cancer, Make-A-Wish Foundation of Wisconsin, and the Wisconsin Humane Society. Now, tickets for the September 25th game are not available for purchase as they traditionally are, so pay attention to this. Instead, fans will be able to get tickets by going to brewers.com/giveback and naming their own ticket price. The minimum price is $10. All proceeds from their purchase will be donated to one of the four participating charities. Tickets are made available by level and distributed on a first-come, first-served basis, beginning with field level, then on to loge level, club level, etc. Fans can get the best seats in the house for a great price, all while helping local causes. Now, while each ticket can be purchased for a non-deductible minimum donation of $10, fans can elect to pay more to support their charity. So a drop-down menu will allow fans to pay up to $50 per ticket, with all proceeds still going to that charity. For donations of greater than $50, fans may call 414-902-4000. Another drop-down menu on the purchase page will allow the fans to select the charity that they want their ticket proceeds to go to of the four that were designated. So that's going to be really cool. That'll be a nice way to end the season here at home at Miller Park on September 25th with everybody giving back to some great charities, doing some great work in the community. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Brewers on Tap. We thank you for listening. We'll be back with you with another edition, episode number 62, coming your way next week. I'm Lane Grindle. Have a great week, everyone.